ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Many mothers especially like to worship Krishna as baby Krishna. You can see why. The baby completely captures the attention. Krishna's a very naughty boy. What's it like to have a naughty? He's not old enough to be naughty, is it? Oh, yeah. You said it incredulously. See, I'm not a mother. I don't know. The more naughty they are, the more lovable they are, it seems.
Well, I'm not naughty.
What does she say?
I'm not.
You're not, she's not naughty? No, girls should be nice. Boys should be, what is it, sticks and stones and pussycat bones? That's what little boys are made of. And what's girls?
Snails and puppy dogs.
Sugar and spice and all things nice. That's what little girls are made of. That's the original feministic nursery rhyme. Interestingly, just see how you like to embrace the little child. Well, in traditional cultures, girls have babies from a young age. In modern life, you have independence, but no babies. Every girl wants to have children. So that goes along with the body, goes the mindset. But modern life means it's crazy. Anyway, I won't get into that now. What I want to talk about, last year when I was in Ireland, there was a poster advertising some program with myself speaking, and I thought I'd speak about it, but I put it off, procrastination, and this is my last lecture here in Ireland, so I better speak about it now before it becomes ancient history. There was a poster advertising myself as a bhakti yoga master. Presumably that's because, well, you hear about yoga masters, and bhakti yoga is also a process of yoga. It's actually the process of yoga, because yoga means linking with the Supreme. But most practitioners that are in the different paths of yoga, they don't know who the Supreme is or what the real meaning of yoga is. So you see, he's doing some yoga exercises there. We can't do very easily. You can do that. Catch your toe and pull it up like that. So, I guess in deference to that, I give the idea someone very important who's a bhakti yoga master. But the idea of being a yoga master is that you control the body in various ways, and you can put your legs up behind your neck while you're balancing yourself on one finger and holding the breath. And then you become a yoga master. Yoga master also gives the idea that he's attained siddhi, or perfection. And there are eight principal siddhis that the perfected yogis can attain, such as becoming invisible, getting whatever you like. This TM, so-called transcendental meditation, they were advertising that when you become advanced, that you can levitate. But, I mean, even if you could raise yourself off the seat, what would be the benefit, actually?
Still miserable.
Still miserable, yeah. Not really any benefit. So the idea is to become a master. And actually in yoga, the definition of yoga is in the Yoga Sutras, the mechanical system of yoga, by controlling the body and the breath, the idea is to control the mind. And yoga indriya samyamya means, yoga means to bring the senses under control. The senses can be brought under control if the mind is brought under control. It's a very difficult proposition, especially in the modern age where everything is meant to agitate the mind. All the advertisements, the music it doesn't make the mind peaceful, it makes it more agitated, much of the what is called music. The whole culture is based on greed and acquisition, so the mind is always running after so many things. But yoga at the level of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras means to control the senses, yoga indriya samyamya. And, or actually at the beginning of the Yoga Senses Sutras, he says, chitta nirodha, yoga chitta nirodha, to stop the consciousness, which is not practicable because we're all conscious living beings. So anyway, the idea of becoming a yoga master by perfecting the techniques is actually completely antithetical to the real purpose of yoga, which means to link with the Supreme. The Supreme is Krishna, who is the Supreme Controller. We are controlled. To think that we will become a master is our whole disease, as Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita. Ishvaro ham aham bhogi, siddho ham balavan sukhi. Anyone who thinks, I am the controller, I am the exploiter of this world, I'm here to enjoy this world, I'm perfect, I'm powerful, I'm happy. Anyone who thinks like this without a connection with Krishna, they are simply in a big illusion. So bhakti yoga means to link with Krishna by the method of submission. He is the controller, he is the master, and we are subordinate to him. So the whole idea of bhakti yoga is to become a servant, and not even the servant, but the servant of the servant. You can stay if you like. You can take shifts if you want, 10-minute shifts. Because I think you'd like to stay. But it's the demands of the baby life. That's again, did you hear that seminar I gave, Women Masters or Mothers? How the children problem is not, I mean, children, we shouldn't think of them as a problem, but there are certain drawbacks. So the way this is got around traditionally is to have the extended family, in which there are many mothers for many children, and so if one or two need to take a break from time to time, it's not a problem. And there are grandmothers who are super mothers. Still, yeah, because they still have families which are more than 2 plus 2. Hum do hamare do in Hindi. We are two, we have two. So, yeah, so the idea of becoming a master is completely antithetical to bhakti yoga. So when I saw bhakti yoga master, I understood that that was given as an advertisement to make people think that here is someone worth coming to see or hear from. But actually in bhakti or devotion to Krishna, the idea is not to make oneself a master, but to make oneself, or to take the position of being not only a servant, but the servant of Krishna's servants. And you can take that further. You can be the servant of Krishna's servants. And you can take it further. You can be the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna's servants, and you get the idea. You can go on saying this. To take a very humble position, which is a realistic position, because we are tiny, tiny little beings, and we might be able to master our body and get some mystic siddhis, but that is, after all, a gift. We may think that we are controlling, but ultimately we're very, very tiny. Someone may think he's a controller. Someone might think, I am the boss of my business, but the business controls them. I said that specifically with certain person in mind. Well, it's true of everyone. If you think I'll just leave it all to my managers and let them do it, then they'll make a mess. And they'll probably loot you and divert all the profits into their own bank accounts. So how much can we control? This illusion that I am a controller, that is the illusion that binds us in this material world. And those who appear to be most successful in this material world are the ones who are in the biggest trouble. And everyone prays, oh, very rich, very powerful, they're in control. But they are in a bigger illusion, and they're racking up more karma than others by their sinful activities and by their egoism. Now, it's not that there's no hierarchy in bhakti yoga. There is, as in any, wherever there is any social organization, even in a family, there's a hierarchy. That traditionally the man is supposed to be in charge and the wife is subordinate and the children are subordinate to them. I mean, within the family there may be some different psychological factors, but that's the generally accepted model. Wherever there are people, there is some hierarchy. Ideas of absolute egalitarianism, it's just a myth. It doesn't exist anywhere. So where there are several practitioners of bhakti yoga or devotees, then there is some system of social hierarchy also. Just like in our Krishna consciousness movement, some of the members are called swamis, which means master. You may think, well, wait a minute, what are we talking about? He's supposed to be servant. But the master means they're supposed to be masters of their senses. And in this way, by controlling their senses, they are able to give guidance to others. But still, in bhakti, in devotion to Krishna, even if one is taking the role of being a leader, of being a guru, guru means spiritual master, but one can only be a spiritual master in bhakti if one is very deeply imbibed the sense of being the servant of his own guru and of all the previous gurus and of Krishna and even of the devotees or the people that he's teaching. One should have the mood that I am teaching others on the order of my guru, on the order of Krishna, told me to teach others. But I have to do that, and to teach them you have to take socially a superior position. But one should always consider that I am a servant, because that is our actual position. We cannot teach others unless we ourselves are fixed in the position of being a servant. Otherwise, what are we going to teach? Teaching is by precept, by speaking, giving instruction, and it's by practice also, by example. So one has to uh, imbibe that. Otherwise, one cannot help others on the path of bhakti unless one has imbibed the mode of being a servant. So, to be a swami or to be a leader in Krishna consciousness means to be a servant who has accepted the service of guiding others. But the position of being a servant, that is the essence. So to be a bhakti yoga servant, one who's actually understood and acts on the platform being a servant, is the actual position, not to be a bhakti yoga master, or to think that one is a master. Others may look to that person as a master, spiritual master, but the whole understanding is quite different from that of being a yoga master or a martial arts master. You've perfected these techniques and now you're in control. So the whole idea of wanting to be a master, a controller, that is egoism. To think, I want to be number one. But number one is already fixed. Krishna is number one. And it's always fixed. And no one else is going to be number one. Or even to be number two. Okay, no, I can't be number one. I'll be number two. That's already taken. Okay, put me up as high as you can. But rather the devotee thinks that let me be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. But everyone thinks, let me be the master of the master of the master of the master. Let me be number one. So those who want to be like that, they're in a very dangerous position. We understand from Shastra, from Vedic scripture, that the king, or in the modern age, that would be the head of the state, they, along with all the power and the glory and the name and the fame and they have to accept 1/6 of the karmic reactions of their citizens. So the king should guide the citizens to act in a pious way. But in the modern age, they have no idea. So all the animal slaughter and illicit sex and abortions and contraception and all these sinful activities are going on. The leader of the state has to take 1/6 of the reactions. Whew. Lucky is the person who's not the head of a state in the modern age. Very, very serious reactions, karmic reactions one has to take. But still, everyone, some people more than others, they have this drive to want to be in charge, to want to show themselves to be bigger than others. One Srila Prabhupada, our guru, he was in Japan and he was negotiating with Dai Nippon, one printing company, for printing his books. And so there was a conference table and all the executives there were there and they had some discussion. And all the members of the company, they left their business cards. And after the meeting, they left, and they just left one junior executive to look after their customer. In this case, it was Srila Prabhupada, our guru. So Srila Prabhupada asked this junior executive, what is your goal of life? So this junior executive, a young Japanese man, he's probably an old Japanese man now, if he's still alive, he gathered all the... In reply, without saying anything, he gathered all the business cards and stacked them up in order. With on top, there was the chief executive of the company, and then there was the directors, and he stacked them up in order with his at the bottom, because that was his position in relation to the others. And then he pulled out the bottom card and put it on top, said, that's my goal of life. I should be the biggest. It's a dramatic way of doing it. So that is the egoism, the desire to be on top. It's not even to have so much money, but just to show, yes, I'm on top. When I walk through the company factory Everyone salams me and they know I'm very big, I'm very powerful, I'm very important. That feeling of walking like this with a couple of henchmen, one on each side. And everyone goes, ah, ah. So this idea of becoming a yoga master, it's a very dangerous concept, or being a master of anything. Because that fuels the ego. At Kumbh Mela, I went once in 1989. I didn't go again since then. You can see so many yogis. They come out of their caves once every 12 years. Otherwise, they're sitting in the cave. And their hair is growing. Like now, they have Rastafarian locks. But that's an old tradition in India. There's a name for it even in Sanskrit. Jata, which means matted hair. And they put some natural ingredient so it doesn't fall out. Otherwise, the hair will rot and fall out. So usually they make a big beehive on top of their head, but sometimes they let it down. And you can see some yogis, it come, their long hair comes down to their feet and even beyond, which means they're very old. They may be some hundreds of years old. By becoming a yoga master and controlling the breath, you can live for hundreds of years, even now. So, that's a prestige symbol among yogis, to have the longest hair, like it used to be among the hippies, maybe still. Whew. What a cheap pleasure in life. Every 12 years you can come out and show your long hair. And people, thousands of people will come and see, oh, what a yogi. And you'll see them lying on a bed of, they bring their thorns all the way into the Kumbh Mela camp and lie down on it. And people can see, oh, it's a yogi lying on thorns. What a kick, what a thrill you can get from that. So, this is egoism. And the Mayavadis, or the impersonalists, or those who are trying to be yogis without the bliss and the sweetness of, and the reality of surrendering to Krishna, they talk a lot about this ahankar, egoism, how we have to get free of egoism. But at the same time, they want to advertise themselves as a yoga master. So what's going on here? They want to be free of ego, but at the same time, as you become adept in yoga, then you become recognized by others, and you can become recognized as a master. So you're trying to become free from ego, but it's just increasing. I saw once in a holy place in India, one big Maya, this kind of impersonalist or non-devotional yogi, famous one. He was coming to the holy place. He was carried on a palanquin. There are all these people jumping and dancing around him, saying Jai and saying his name. And he was sitting there like this, looking like the most proud person I'd ever seen in my life. Just like he couldn't care for all these followers. He was almost lying down like this. So I thought, you can tell people from their aura, just the whole atmosphere around them, just like some extreme pride. What is that? What's the value? Definitely he was a very learned scholar and very austere and very renounced, but at the end of all that, if you're just proud of it, then you didn't advance even one millimeter in actual spiritual life. When you do see some people who are not devotees, and there are actually quite egoless in some ways, probably many of the the greatest holy men in India are people that no one's ever heard of. Because that's what they do. They just go away and they don't want to make a big show of themselves. Some devotees told me that they went to some town and they were told about such and such a person, and people brought them to see him, and he was just living on a mountain in some cave, and he told them, actually, I just came here, I didn't tell anyone, I didn't want anyone to come and see me, I went as far away as I could from any town, but somehow people found me, and now they keep on coming and asking for blessings, and they want to build a temple. All I just want to be, I just want to be alone and meditate. But he wasn't allowed to be. So there may be such persons who they're not looking for name or fame, and they just want to be away from the madding crowd and just be spiritual. But even if you're really trying your best to be egoless and not advertise yourself, unless we recognize our position as servants of Krishna, we can't really be egoless. In other words, even if you're not trying to be a master, a yoga master, but when that's good, to want to be detached from the world and not to present oneself as a master, that's good. But to not want to be a master is a good start, but to positively cultivate one's existence as a servant, that is much better. And not only servant, but specifically to be a servant of Krishna and understand who actually is the boss of everything. And to make ourselves the servant of Krishna, that is the proper position of yoga. Now, we'll become the servant of mankind, and we'll feed people and open hospitals and schools. But how much can we serve? How many people can we serve? And how much is our capacity to serve? And how does that help them anyway, ultimately? Because unless we understand that we are servants of Krishna, even if we're hungry and we get some food, that's ultimately not going to help us. Or if we get an education so that we can get a job and get some money so that we can feed ourselves, that ultimately doesn't help us if we don't understand that we are servants of Krishna. So devotees may accept some advertisement, just like my photo is downstairs. If I wanted to be more egoless, you could say, well, why should I accept that? Don't advertise me. But that advertisement is meant to attract people to come and hear that we are all servants of Krishna. And it's my service to inform people that we are all servants of Krishna. But if I think that, well, that's to advertise me, I should be glorified, then I myself become egoistic. Do you see? It's like a fine balance. We ourselves should not promote ourselves, but some promotion may be accepted to facilitate promoting Krishna consciousness. I was talking about Kumbh Mela when Srila Prabhupada was there one time with his disciples. They saw some of these big sadhus, famous sadhus, going on elephants to show that they're big sadhus, or their disciples put them on big elephants to show their importance. And some disciples said to Srila Prabhupada, we should put you on the elephant to show that you're the biggest sadhu. And Prabhupada said, no, we can put Krishna there. Krishna doesn't need an elephant to ride on. But if we want to show who's the biggest and the best, then we should put Krishna on the elephant. And actually that's a system in many temples in India. Well, it's traditional that there are processions with the deity of Krishna in a very regal manner in which the deity of Krishna comes out and goes on the biggest elephant and is treated like a king. He's the king of all kings. So everyone can offer their respect to Krishna. So that was Srila Prabhupada's attitude. Even though he's the spiritual master, he's the spiritual master by always promoting Krishna. And actually, to become a yoga master or a perfect yogi, that's all we really have to understand. To become a perfect yogi, you don't have to do breath exercises or physical exercises or get some mystic powers. It's got nothing to do with real yoga, because real yoga means linking with Krishna, and that is possible by bhakti. So all we have to do is accept that I am eternally a servant of Krishna, and that's all we have to do. That's it, finished. You can become a perfect yogi in 1 second, just by accepting I'm a servant of Krishna. But for most people, it takes more time because we're all rascals. We don't want to accept that we are constitutionally subordinate. And we have this very strong desire to show ourselves and enjoy this world and my identity as a servant of Krishna. We actually have to go through a whole process just to understand that we're servants of Krishna. Bhakti yoga starts with accepting that I'm a servant of Krishna, theoretically. And we go through a whole process, and at the end of it, what do we realize? I'm a servant of Krishna. We start it by understanding, by accepting that actually I'm supposed to serve Krishna. And the perfection of that process is to just accept that I'm a servant of Krishna. And is that the end of it? No, that's the real beginning. The real beginning of Krishna consciousness is when I just accept that I'm a servant of Krishna. And I really don't have anything else to do in this world. There's nothing else to do. Because we're in this world, we have to do something. We may have to brush our teeth and some things. And we may have to do many more things than brush our teeth. We may have to work in a job or whatever. We may have so many obligations connected with the body that we're in, but really our only purpose of life should be to serve Krishna. I made a few more notes about that. Yeah. That's all. Well, what about, you may say, well, what about Krishna? I mean, we're all supposed to be servants of Him, that's what we're saying, and that's spiritual life. But Krishna seems to be the most egoistic person possible. He says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvang pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna, while giving spiritual knowledge to Arjuna, he says that, well, I am the source of everything, everything comes from me, and persons who are actually intelligent, they just worship me with love. Arjuna was a very good man, he wanted to be a pacifist, good moralist, and Krishna told him, you're just a foolish rascal, nonsense number one. I didn't say that to you, I'm just saying what Krishna said to Arjuna. You're not allowed to go without taking prasadam. There's prasadam. You already took it? Okay. All right. Hare Krishna. So it might seem that Krishna is very egoistic. And then how can we follow Krishna? Well, actually it's a fact. Krishna is the most egoistic. He tells everyone, you should surrender to me. I'm in control. He's the center of everything. Everything centers around him. Yes, Krishna is very egoistic, but it's good. Krishna's egoism is not a bad egoism. Egoism of people thinking that I'm not the servant of Krishna results in their trying to exploit others, but Krishna actually loves everyone, and his egoism or putting himself in the center means that he is in the center. Krishna means all attractive, and he attracts everyone so that we can all engage in loving exchanges with him. So Krishna's apparent egoism, it's not some kind of haughtiness or pride, but it's just a statement of fact. Just like if the President of the United States says that I am the President of the United States, he's just stating a fact, that's all. So for him, he may say it with egoism, but it's just a statement of fact. So if Krishna says that I am supreme and everyone is subordinate to me, then it's not egoism on Krishna's part. And actually Krishna's got nothing to gain from us. He has no motive to exploit us or to mistreat us. Krishna is only looking for us to reciprocate lovingly with him. But we can't do so if we're trying to compete with him. So this egoism of thinking, I'm in charge, I don't need anyone to tell me what to do, I don't need any God in my life, this egoism causes pride, it separates us from Krishna. This is not at all beneficial for us. So Krishna, he's egoistic, we may say. He's full of himself. He's thinking of himself. But that is not exploitive. That is beneficial for everyone. Because actually we're all part and parcel of Krishna. We're all inseparable from Krishna. We don't have any existence outside of Krishna, nor is there any possibility of any existence outside of Krishna. We're all tiny expansions of Krishna. So, Krishna might seem to be the most egoistic. Well, in some ways you can say that, but that's his constitutional position, to be supreme. And we can be free from false ego, and with the false ego comes pride, lust, greed, frustration, because we want to be number one but we can't. So we can be free from false ego and all the bad side effects simply by admitting that I am a servant of Krishna. That's all. That's all it takes. But we have so much false ego, it's very difficult for us. We have to practice hard. It's what should be most natural, because our consciousness is so polluted by the idea that I am the center of everything, that we have to practice. We have to practice bhakti yoga. And ultimately, by practicing bhakti yoga, we don't become a master, we realize our position as servant, and then that is the perfection of yoga, to realize that I am a servant. So Srila Prabhupada is the spiritual master of this Krishna consciousness movement. We call him a spiritual master or guru because he's completely fixed in serving his guru, who is completely fixed in serving his guru, and the original guru is Krishna. And one who is fixed in serving Krishna has no motive to exploit others. They simply want to share Krishna's love with others. And we see practically that Srila Prabhupada, as an ideal spiritual master, as a pure devotee, he had exhibited no personal egoism, even though to train others as a spiritual master, he would sometimes chastise them, sometimes shout at them, to help his disciples and others understand the foolishness of not surrendering to Krishna. So we require to follow, to be trained by a spiritual master. Spiritual master is one who understands, I am not a master. I'm a servant. We require that. Otherwise, if we trust our own ego, we're in a lot of trouble. As yesterday, someone was talking about following my heart. Very dangerous, because what we think is our heart is our egoism. We don't know, actually, what we're supposed to be doing. We may think that, oh yeah, well, in my heart I felt this and this, but what is our heart? Our heart is not pure. We're not linked properly with Krishna. We're separated from Krishna. That's why we have to follow the process of bhakti yoga. Yoga means linking with Krishna by devotion. Devotion begins with surrender, submission to Krishna. So be careful of yoga masters and try to become a bhakti servant. That is the proper position. As long as we're trying to be a master, we must be frustrated because we are constitutionally servants. When we accept that we are servants and understand who is the supreme master, that is Krishna, then we can begin to enter into our original, loving, sweet relationship with Krishna. Krishna is not a master who whips his servants or mistreats his servants. Krishna wants the best for everyone. Therefore, he sends great devotees like Srila Prabhupada to this world to demonstrate to us what it means to be a pure devotee of Krishna, completely freed from any false egoism and completely fixed in the understanding that we are here to serve Krishna, and that is what everyone should do, and to teach us how to serve Krishna, how to revive our real consciousness of service to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question, please? On your t-shirt you have a skull. That seems to be a very popular motive. People have skull. And there's some, who was that? He had some necklace of metal skull. What's this fascination with skulls? It's like really at the lower level of...
Shaivite.
Really, at the lower level of consciousness. Well, Shaivite, that's more like Tantra.
It's just
remind you of your own mentality.
Mortality.
Yeah. Mortality. Mortality. Possibly, yeah. Maybe, but that in our Krishna consciousness process, it's more of a positive process than a negative process. Positive and negative, both are there. We have to point out the miseries of this world, but our meditation should be on Krishna. Yeah, the tantric process has got that going down to the lowest depths and then extricating yourselves. But our process is to reach up and pray for Krishna's mercy. And Krishna's mercy may come down on us. Otherwise, skulls means there's going to be some lower spirits floating around who don't have good motives and who mess up our consciousness. So we should be reminded of our mortality, but we do that by regularly hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, you can keep a skull, but unless we hear, we'll just become indifferent to it. In one Buddhist monastery which I visited in Thailand, this was quite a long time ago, there was one exhibit. It was a dead body, which somehow or other it was a dead body of a woman. I mean, there are dead bodies all over the place. You see, in butcher shops, there are lots of dead bodies or parts of dead bodies. But this was of a woman, and I don't know how, somehow or other, it was not fully rotting, although it was a bit of a smell. And that was an exhibit. And there was a photo next to that of a young, pretty girl. So that was something for the Buddhist monks to meditate on. We have the deity of Krishna. The figure, this is immortality, Krishna. The figure of immortality. Immortality, beautiful immortality. Krishna never dies, he never grows old. Otherwise, this skulls is often connected with all over the world. It's not just in India, with black magic and voodoo and Satanism and all these kind of things. It's in technical language, Bhagavad Gita language, that's called tamasic, tamagun, the mode of ignorance. So that's not helpful for advancement in Krishna consciousness. But it is. Is that the fashion of 2013, or is it going on?
These earphones called skull candy. So a lot of people wearing these earphones and they have a skull.
They have a skull motive.
Like Nike, yeah. So it's popular.
Popular skulls, huh? Skulls are popular. Not very auspicious. Okay, Hare Krishna.